Welcome to Mecha Do About Nothing, the only mecha podcast who spent 3 months learning how to edit audio. I'm your host, Ian Gregory.
And I'm your host, Daniel Forziat.
And this week we watched... Knights and Magiku.
You're going to make the same joke, aren't you, Ian?
It still bothers me. Every time I have to read it, I'm going to make that joke because it upsets me deep down to my core.
Yeah, it's one of the more unique titles we've ever had, while also being the most generic title we've ever had. So,
Gargantua on the Verdurous Planet probably still is like the cake taker, if you will.
I was actually going to bring up that show in this podcast, so I feel like we are proving more and more that we are drift compatible.
We can pilot the Sundog together.
Who's going to be in front in doggy position? Because I choose you.
Am I the bottom here? I guess so. Oh boy. I just watched another Godzilla movie last night, by the way, and it's like
I saw your Snapchat, and it was pretty unbelievable. Which one did you watch?
Destroy All Monsters, which is from 1968.
Oh, is that the first like Monster Mash one?
Yeah, where they literally all of them show up.
Because there's Future Wars? What's the... There's like a
Final
newer-ish
Wars
one.
Is from like 2001.
Final Wars.
And that's a Monster Mash. But...
Okay.
68 is the one where like, oh no, all the monsters are being mind controlled. And also now here's King Ghidorah. Which is really funny.
Yeah, I love that where they're just like, here's all the lame little dudes. And then here's Ghidorah. And everyone's like, there he is. That's the boy.
But anyway, that's it. You saying drift compatible made me think about that. Because Pacific Rim is just a rip on Godzilla, obviously. So,
I guess it is. Everything sort of circles back to Godzilla in one way or another.
All right. Well, Dan, we're done with Knights of Magic. This is the end of the anime, and I highly doubt we'll ever get another anime of this.
I don't think we will.
About three episodes in, we passed where the manga is up to date. Which is like chapter 70, and I have no clue where the light novel and novels are, because I don't read light novels.
Yeah, who reads light novels besides those people on the trains, you know what I'm saying?
So I actually I've tried to read light novels a couple of times.
Paper cover.
Because people are like, oh, you should read the light novel for this series or whatever. I'm like, well, I need something to do on the train, and I have never been able to make it into them.
That's like the most Japanese thing you've ever said. Yeah. I have embarrassingly... read one light novel.
Yeah. Which one are you allowed to say?
I can't.
Are you legally obligated to not say to divulge the identity of this
I read it before the anime came out. I read this about 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's really embarrassing. Are you ready for this?
Yeah. Yeah.
I read the first light novel of Rise of the Shield Hero.
Oh no, that is embarrassing.
Isn't it? So
I worked on Rise of the Shield Hero like last week on this show.
Yeah, I know, right? I was too embarrassed to speak up. I worked part-time at a library my senior year of college, and I just there was nothing to do in the summer because there's no students, right?
Yeah.
Like, very little students. And so I was able to just do homework or whatever. I couldn't really like do stuff, so I could just like read or do homework, but I didn't have homework, right? Because summer. So I was on Amazon, I was buying books, right? As one does. And it was like recommended. I don't know why. And it was like, oh, it was really good reviews. It's like a top seller for like something you may like, blah, blah, blah. And it was like cheap. It was like $8. It was thick too. I wanted something juicy. So I was like, I'll buy it. And I was like, wow, that was something. Minor spoilers to that. And then I'll be done talking about this. The opening scene is a guy gets accused of rape.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? And then the rest of it is just generic awfulness. And if you've ever seen the first two episodes of Sword Art Online, you've basically seen the entire first part of the light novel of that. So, yeah, it's awful. Don't read it. Don't watch it. I think it's bad.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And I just was never able to get into the writing style in light novels where they basically dispense with all scene description. And things just happen like real fast. And they're like, and then I said this.
Yeah,
he said this.
Pretty much.
I felt like doing this, so I went and did that. Like, and you're like, huh, but it's like all plot.
I wonder if it's the translation if it's just the medium, the genre, not the genre.
Well,
the medium,
I highly suspect it reads as less frustrating in Japanese, which is already a vague language. So it probably feels less unnatural that there's not scene description and stuff. But in English, it sounds like they're intentionally leaving out things. And you're like, what is happening? Where are we? Who is this? Like, but in light novels, they just zip through that sort of stuff. Very frustrating.
Agreed.
You know, good old Nihon Jinran, that the Japanese language is specifically constructed to train Japanese people to think in a uniquely Japanese way, and that's the best way to think. Are you aware of this, Dan?
I don't, and I want to ask you to continue just because I'm interested, but we're on a podcast.
It's a school of thought in Japan that Japan is like a unique country because it has several unique cultural circumstances. One of the key theses is that the Japanese language is unique, which is true. It's a unique language. That's how languages work. But it's so unique in that it's so vague that speaking it trains native Japanese speakers to think in a certain way. And that
even is that why they're all part of the hive mind?
And even if a foreigner were to learn fluent Japanese, they would still stand out as a foreigner because they can't think like a Japanese person.
That's horrifying. I don't like that. Something about that rubs me the wrong way.
Taken beyond its like academic interest or whatever to like the full ethno-nationalist endpoint, which is what a lot of people are. They're just like, Japan is the only country in the world that has four seasons. Dan's giving me a shocked look. It's true that Japan has a rainy season, which doesn't exist in other countries. So I think that's the basis for it is like we have four distinct seasons. But in America, like the spring and the summer are basically the same.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, that's lame. I don't believe that. They're stupid.
Dan.
But yeah, there are two kanji together. It's like I don't know what it is, like shiki, I forget. But yeah, it literally just means the four seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I learned it the other day, but you know, whatever. So yeah, there you go. Maybe that's part of it. It's like famous.
Anyway, that's like my extremely roundabout explanation for why it's impossible to read light novels in English.
All right, cool. Now that we have covered that,
probably offended a key part of our fan base. Yeah.
Yeah, please write in to tell us why we're wrong about that. Because we're always wrong.
We definitely have a few followers who've actually studied Japan, so they can definitely set us straight on this horrible misinformation I'm sure I've just repeated. Do you want to do the summary, and then we'll just get into this discussion, because like this show is wild.
Yeah, I think that's for the best. And I'm sure our overall feelings will dispense quite quickly once we're done with that, so go for it.
A large group of demon beasts attack Alfheim, where the Alves, that's ALVS to be clear, live, and where Aether reactors are made. The Order of the Silver Phoenix is dispatched to help, and they easily defeat the beasts and their queen. Ernie is granted permission to learn how Aether reactors are made, and he learns it very quickly from the leader of the Alves. He uses the core of the two demon beasts he's killed, the Leviathan and Shellcased Queen, to make his own custom Aether reactor for his personal knight. The Zalodek kingdom decides it is going to conquer the entire continent, and they invade their neighbor Kushpersha. Princess Eleonora of Kushpersha escapes, but is very quickly captured. The Order of the Silver Phoenix is sent to deal with the situation, along with the prince/king. It's really he's like technically king, but the old king is still kind of giving all the orders. They realize that Zalodek's new mechs are actually modified Telestaris, meaning that Zalodek was behind the robbery many episodes ago. Hearing that Eleonora is set to be married off, they rush off and rescue her in silhouette gears. Ernie upgrades Kushpersha's knights to help them defend the base, and they kill the woman who is responsible for stealing the Telestaris. Zalodek has discovered airship technology and launches an assault with their flying ships. Many are shot down by Ernie's anti-air missiles, and the rest are attacked head-on by his flying Ikaruga. Eleonora becomes queen, and Horatio, the head engineer of Zalodek, reveals one more weapon to the princess of Zalodek. A giant airship shaped like a dragon attacks Ernie's group, and they are unable to defeat it. However, they manage to force the enemy to retreat by wearing down their Aether reactors. Horatio upgrades the dragon with a bigger reactor and a barrier, and the final battle begins. They manage to heavily damage the dragon, but the commander decides to ram it into the Kushpersian castle to kill Eleonora. Kid and Ernie defeat it and push it away from the encampment, winning the war. Horatio is seen plotting when he'll next get to compete with Ernie, and everyone lives happily ever after.
So you were completely right that the whole isekai thing really has absolutely no bearing on the show whatsoever.
That is, in fact, how isekai works, yeah.
That's so stupid. What a dumb genre. Who made this? Get him over here. Let me talk to him.
I don't know. Why would you do this, dude? So here's a key thing, Dan. Sword Art Online isn't even technically an isekai show.
Yeah, because it's like circumstantially, like there's not there isn't another world. It's just a game.
So
and there's a real world.
Those are like
humans,
sort of they're isekais. They're a genre people call them VRMMOs or VRMMO, because that is its own genre. Well, it's people who play VRMMOs.
Those are also, I hate.
They're not any better. But the VRMMOs are probably even more about making number go up. Like,
yeah, no, that actually, it's probably one episode, but the amount of Sword Art I watched was like him, like, just like killing slimes because he like was like, I need to level up. Or maybe that was Shield Hero. I get those confused in my mind all the time.
But it's just, like, Shield Hero, he does kill a lot of slimes to level up.
Yeah, because he has a shield, right? He's like, oh, kill the slimes.
So number go up.
I hate level anime. Counter go I hate forever. Everything. God, he's speaking in meme. Someone help me. I got a little zoomer over here.
The like I said, it's all based on Dragon Quest. That's why they all fight slimes.
Yeah, but Dragon Quest is sick. Akira Toriyama is sick, dude. Oh, I love Akira Toriyama. He's so cool.
All right.
Okay, anyhow, let's go to highlights.
Dan, that was like full, you went, I hate anime to I love Akira Toriyama in under 10 seconds.
Don't worry about it. It's fine.
So.
I'm okay. I'm not a cry for help.
My highlight is.
Yes.
As the dragon is falling down on the encampment, Ernie takes the Ikaruga to push it away. And like and then we see a lot of blue and green particles fill the air. And he says, the Leviathan and shell-cased cores in the Ikaruga aren't just for show, or aren't for show. Which is, of course, a reference to when Amuro Ray is pushing Axis surrounded by blue and green particles. And he says, the new Gundam isn't just for show. So they recognize that at the end here, they're basically doing the end of Char's counterattack and have him say the same line as Amuro. Which, to be honest, I'm impressed by their restraint, because this feels like the first explicit reference to a show they've pulled out.
Yeah, and I actually missed the line reference because I just talked to you prior to this recording and you explained it to me. But I did the symbolism was very much apparent.
Yeah,
I was like, wow, this has to be an homage to.
Well, what I like about it is that Ernie makes that reference like clearly smiling to himself because he's excited that he gets to like do it himself, because that's always been his priority. But. And I, like I said, so I'm surprised that this is the only time they actually made like a Gundam joke or something. Because like, you really would have expected more, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe not on the level of Build Fighters, but still. But I understand why they didn't, because what happened is what happens always when you have an okay show making a reference to a better show, which is I thought to myself, maybe I should just watch Char's counterattack instead.
Yeah, right. Like, that's like a huge dilemma whenever someone tries to kind of copy something in any medium. It's like, why not just enjoy the original?
Yeah.
My highlight is when Ernie is fighting the Prince of the Bad Nation. Kingdom, whatever. Yeah, he basically disarms the dude and has him like, he's like, listen, man, I'm going to kill you if you don't get out of your mech. And he's like, wait a second. How much are they paying you? I'll pay you double. I'll do all this stuff. I'll give you all this stuff. And Ernie's like, well, actually, how much are we talking? And it seems like he's like kind of serious, because I guess like keep in mind, Ernie doesn't really have an allegiance to this world.
No, or to his country.
It's really like weird, because like he does have a family. Well, you know, air quotes family, because he's not really.
Yeah,
their kid. He does have air quotes friends, but
they're not giant robots, which is all he really cares about.
Yeah. So anyhow, it's kind of cute, because you're like, wait a second, is he actually gonna? But like, if they did that though, that'd blow my mind. I know they can't. Like, they physically couldn't do that.
His actual list of demands is like, give me command over every silhouette knight in your country, and like, let me do this and let me do that. And the guy's like, what?
And he's like, because that's literally what I have now. And he's like, you got to be kidding me. So I thought that was cute. It was like kind of funny.
Yeah. All right, Dan, let's address the elephant in the room, I suppose.
Yeah.
This show's pacing is still insane.
It's unbelievable, actually. So, I want to say, what is the first episode in this block? Is it the one where they kill the giant, ugly alien looking thing?
The ants?
Or is it when they go see the elves?
It's when they go to see the elves. And they kill the giant-looking alien thing. Those are the same episode. And Ernie learns how to make aether reactors that episode.
That episode was worthless. Oh, so stupid. Man, I'm telling you what. Okay.
Oh, no.
This whole Demon Beast thing, which I actually talked about earlier, is such a red herring. It's such a wasted plot point. It's such like, okay. I like continuity in my show.
He does.
Or in my medium, right? And I'll save a little bit for this for a discussion point we have later. But the whole Demon Beast thing is like so forgotten, where they're just like, okay, there's like these huge demon beasts in this world, but they're also irrelevant 98% of the time, except for when we want them to be. And so now here's just a new demon beast they've got to kill, and it's got like these eggs and blah, blah, blah. And then here's these whole other race of like elf bug people. And we only have them for one episode, basically. And it's like, what's the point? What's the point of having these elf people that also don't, like, do anything besides teach Ernie how an ether reactor is made? And then we get introduced to this, like, Oracle.
Yeah.
Elf lady. Who just seems important, but isn't. So that's my rant.
It's... The elves are hilarious to me, right? Because it's like, oh, we're gonna go with the head designer of like the Silhouette Night Lab, right? He's coming too. It's like, oh, why is that? And he pulls off his headdress and he's got like rabbit ears. He's like, because I'm an owl. Yeah,
and like the weird
thing. It's like they're trying to do their whole like they're elves but not sort of deal, which is just like, okay, I don't care. That's fine.
Yeah, it's like so okay.
Yeah, and then all of that elf stuff is like one episode, which is impressive. They do the whole fight in half an episode, and they do the whole thing in the other half where he like masters the aether reactor in only 3 months, and no one's ever been able to do it before because he's a brain genius who's good at programming.
Because he's a programmer. Yeah, there you go.
I love that it's because he's good at programming. It's so arbitrary.
Man.
So
it is, right?
It's just okay. And then once we're through that, though, we're into a single long arc, which is kind of nice, right? 5 episodes on a single arc.
Yeah.
You think now they've got this a little time to like slow things down and really get into the meat of it. Absolutely not. We're introducing like a new character at least every episode, usually a couple.
Mm-hmm.
There's fighting like every episode they fight and defeat a new mini boss. Like it's this whole thing. It's just so much. It just keep going. So there's all the people from the Western Kingdom, right? So there's the prince who's in charge of everything, who's a nightmare. There's the queen. There's that a loyal swordman pilot. There's the old general. There's the head engineer nerd. Then we also meet all the other people at Kushipersha. So like the princess, her handmaid. And then there's like some mm-hmm. commander guy, right?
Yeah, their king.
Their knight. Yeah,
and like there's... Yeah.
So... That's a lot of characters to get introduced in, like, 1 and 2 episodes, and then, like, half of them are dead 2 episodes later.
Gosh, it's just, like, I get that it's sort of, like, an urgency thing, because it's sort of, like, an outer-lying kingdom that gets sacked first, right? And it's, like, okay.
Because it's on, Kushipersha is on their border. So in Kushipersha, then,
yes, yeah. But it's like, but... Did we have to get those all? Do we have to have these characters become significant? Like, I think maybe it would have been cool to have just one of those characters, because that kingdom is referenced earlier by the old main king who was like, my prince son, grandson, you, what were you doing over in that place? And they would be like, oh, okay, that was that place. Cool. I get it.
Studying there, right?
But it's like, yeah, but we have, like, what is there, Eleonora, who's the worst character in this entire show, and then her dad, and then she has, like, a handmaid, but also, like, a matriarchal figure, and they're all, like, actually kind of important, and it's like, this is so bad. It's too much. It's too much to keep, it's literally too much to keep track of, so much so that I actually gave up trying to figure out who the people were in the Western Kingdom. Like, I didn't know who Swordman was. Nope. At the end, I knew who the prince was because I kept calling him the prince. And it's just like, this is too much.
And here's the thing. Like, we know one of them from before. The lady of the bronze claws or whatever, who, like, bronze fangs, who led that operation.
With, like, the scar
to steal the Telestare. definitely you can have her because she's been introduced before and we would recognize her and be like, oh my god, it's that lady again. She's scary and she killed a bunch of people.
Totally.
And she's clearly pretty good because she did manage to steal an experimental like silhouette knife from under their noses. And you can have the prince because you got to have a prince or whoever's in charge of the war. I think you could have the old grizzled commander. That's fine. Like, you need a general and the engineer, and that's it. Just those four, right?
I totally agree.
The swordman can be replaced by the lady of the Bronze Fang in, like, all of those scenes.
Oh, totally.
Where instead of just having her get killed in her first fight, she gets away and shows up again in all those other later silhouette knights that she shows up with. The head engineer is actually an interesting character. Congrats. He's the only one that's, like, worth remembering. And then the others are, like, exactly. So defined by their position and appearance that you don't need to worry about them. They're easy to remember. Like, Old Grizzled General is an Old Grizzled General, and the Prince is the Prince because everyone calls him that. You don't have to remember those characters. That, like, cuts it down.
Yeah, exactly.
However, this is an adaptation of source material in which all of these are different characters who have a lot more time to themselves. So, like with before, and we do very quickly, like, three episodes into this block, get into content that hasn't been adapted yet. But even then, it's like, okay, they're trying to adapt everything that happens in the manga, but cutting out all of the character development and explanation of who these people are and explanation of their like, mobile to suit developments and stuff.
It's, like, such a departure from Macross 7 in every way, because it's like, we had such a show that was so incredibly slow that we were having a tough time, and now we have a show that is one of the fastest we've ever seen. And we're also having a horrible time. And it's like both of these shows needed to find some middle ground that neither could really get to.
It's true that, like, Macross 7 has more slow episodes than this has episodes.
Yeah, right. Guvava's adventure in the
lasts longer than, like, a war. Yeah.
Whatever. Yeah.
So
stupid brontosaurus.
It's just, yeah. It's just a problem with the pacing again, where we can't keep up with the breakneck speed they're trying to adapt this.
Is this anime's biggest problem? Is pacing? Is this every medium's biggest problem?
Pacing is incredibly difficult to get right in anything. And
because I'm trying to think. Well, no, the show 24 has perfect pacing. It's 24 out. It's perfect.
That's how it works.
It's mathematical, really.
The thing about pacing is that it's always a tug of war between a bunch of different interests. So here are the interests that are at play here. One, 13 episode anime, right? That's got to be your first concern.
Yeah.
That's like the main thing, is you got to get everything done in those 13 episodes. That's your time limit. Second interest is you're adapting a source material and you want to get as much of the source material into this work as possible to both appeal to people who read the source material and get people interested in reading it after watching the anime, right? And also, that's just how adaptation works. And maybe the author might have stipulations, too, about what you're allowed to put in and how you're allowed to depict it. Then...
Oh, that's a good point.
You've got the money interest, which is like, I need to get as many silhouette knights into this as possible so we can sell those frickin' toys. Then you've got the director's interest, which is like, what story does he want to tell? And he's like, I'm really interested not in the mobile development stuff, but in all of the conflict and the plot, which means I want to cut out all of that and get to chapter 70 of the manga. And so, but now you've got to find a way to balance all of these competing ideas and all of the stuff going on. In a manga or in the light novel, there is no end date, right? It's not like they're trying to fit it into a 12-chapter manga. So that means the author is free to go off for 5 chapters and talk about developing the Sendog, and it means the anime has to cut all 5 of those. So it's a balancing act. This one fails, but I think that's because it feels to me like this show had to do too much. Like, there was some goal set by the production committee or by the author or by the director that was way too ambitious, that was like, you have to get to the end of this war arc. And then every other decision they made was based around how to get there as quickly as possible without completely abandoning the source material. And even then, they had to cut off, like, tons and tons and tons of content.
Okay. I mean that makes sense. I know it's like a stupid question to ask about something so complicated, but it just seems like That's like something that we keep coming back to. Like, usually in a lot of anime we watch is like one of the biggest things is pacing. It's like, pacing is a problem.
I think part of the reason it's so much more frequent, we talk about like all the time in this, whereas it's not quite so frequent that it comes up in movies or in books. The reason pacing is a problem in like almost every anime is I think because it's so much done by committee. Like, you've literally got a production committee, you've got a director, you've got screenwriters, you've got the original material, and you're working within a preset. You're working within that preset time. A book can be as long as a book needs to be. A manga can be as long as a manga needs to be. Movies are similar, where they have 2.5 hours, but even then, they can be flexible. If they need an extra 10 minutes, they can sort of do that. Anime have such a straight, rigid production timeline and rigid air slots that they can't really... They can't flex.
Yeah, like the weekly
release.
And
if they realize, if they mess up once, like, let's say, for example, completely picking a name out of the hat, let's say you're a director named Tomino, and you spent a little too long doing something early in the series with, like, a character, like, maybe, like, a Ramba Rawl, and then you get to the end of your show, and you're like, oops, there's a few episodes left. You've messed up the pacing once, and it means you're going to have to ruin the pacing for the rest of the show to play catch-up. So it's the sort of thing you can't make a mistake on even once.
It's very true. Or like, you know, every other single Tomino.
I know. It's literally always Tomino. But it was totally random that I chose
poor
him.
Poor guy.
So let's do this next discussion topic, Dan. You think the earlier plot of the show is weak compared to the final arc?
I think, going back to what I brought up last week, which was the first half of the show is so all over the place, where it's like, we have the school arc. I shouldn't use arc because these are usually one episodes. Yeah, right. We have like the demon beasts. We have like the spies. We have all of this stuff like super like gunshotted at us. Like bam, 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 right?
Yeah.
And we finally get to like a very cohesive arc. That's an actual arc. That's very like all similar episodes within a similar story for these last set. And I think by far that this is probably, for the show, because I don't know the actual source material, for the show, this is probably the most enjoyable part, because it's like, I actually get to like look forward to something in a way, which is sort of detrimental when I think back on the rest of the show, is kind of what I'm getting at, is that I ask myself, why did any of that happen? Especially when like, there are characters that just don't show up anymore. There's characters that are completely irrelevant. It's just like, what? I think maybe I'm getting a little ahead of myself because, again, this isn't like, maybe they were expecting if this to do well, they would do a second season because there's no epilogue either. There's no like, and this is what the research division did. And this is what this did. After. It's just
there
like,
is no, this isn't over, the source material.
I know, but they could still, like, right, like, is this up till the end of the light novel? Like, I'm just thinking maybe they could say, okay, what's happening next in the light novel? And then sort of, like, tease that a little bit. But they're, like, the abrupt ending is sort of what is, like, oh, so that's it. Therefore, why did any of that prior stuff have to happen? Or why was that even significant? So, in a way, that's sort of how I felt about the final arc. I don't know if you enjoyed it.
I did. I think it's another example of adaptionitis, where, like, the light novel and the manga have one goal, which is to hook people in so that they will continue reading week to week or month to month or however frequently light novels come out, Lord if I know. So they get you in a couple ways. One, isekai. Easy plot hook, right? It's number one in Japan. Mm-hmm. And then two is like him being really good at magic and developing night runners. So all of that early stuff is varied to give you a taste of like the world and all these different plot lines and everything that's going on. There's a lot of different stuff happening, right? Because something in that is bound to appeal to you, the reader. Do you like fighting demon beasts? There are demon beasts. Do you like the mech development? There's mech development. Do you like fighting other humans? There's fighting other humans, right? It's a bit of everything. It's all over the place. Because it's supposed to lay the groundwork and get you into it. Then, once you're like 40 to 50 chapters into the manga, then you're like, all right, now let's do a big arc involving this enemy nation. The problem is the anime comes at it from the wrong angle, where it's like, we have to get to that. Because that's our end point, and we've got all this other nonsense to blow through, and that's why it's so jarring, right?
Yeah, it's just like the premise is like they're like, hey, we're actually the inheritors of that country, so we need to take our throne back.
Well, that's it. That's standard nationalism, I guess. But also, I love how evil Zaladek looks, that they've got their freaking like city on stilts above a volcano or something. Like,
which for to be, I want to live there. That place looking like sick, Mustafar. Right? That's a cool looking place. Yeah. But also, like, yeah, it's just like, man, you really just made sure these people were evil from the get go. Like
a little telegraphed.
Yeah,
I will say part of what makes the later plot so interesting is the existence of Oratio, who's the enemy engineer who invented flying ships, but using a different method than Ernie invented flying. They sort of came at it, and he invented using aether crystals with some big generator to make ships fly, whereas Ernie's is combustion-based, and based on, like, jets, like we have in our world. And then they have, like, a design philosophy difference, and the whole thing is, like, we're talking with our robots. That's actually pretty fun.
Yeah, I thought that was the best part of this, was the back and forth between those two. It doesn't really make a lot of sense that we take this, like, super gifted isekai boy out of the real world and put him here, and that's why he's so smart. And then we just have a dude, as I said before, who's just from that world, who's just as smart, who can do all of this stuff as quick as him. So, you know, whatever. You know, I get it. They need to have a rival. But I did think that this rivalry was the best part of the show.
Yeah.
And I did like the back and forth as well. I liked that a lot.
I like that it sort of represents the argument between mobile suits and mobile armors. Like, that's a funny, like, fandom thing to reproduce in your show that I liked.
That is good.
So, I don't know. You're right, though, that it is, like, he's not just as smart as Ernie, because he did not invent the Telestari. He just adapted it, right? He got given it and was like, all right, I guess we'll mass produce this.
To be fair, the Viver is,
it's
like,
pretty sick, though.
Seemingly very powerful.
And it's clear that if Ernie wasn't around, then Zaladek would have crushed everyone.
Yeah, exactly. I guess that's sort of my point. Is like, yeah, if Ernie wasn't there, they would have just literally blitzkrieged these people. It would have been absolutely a slaughter. Like, it was
they have
nothing.
Airships.
It would have been like, wow, okay, great.
Well, yeah. Maybe they could have dwelt. I mean, he can't know this, but it is funny that this poor guy is like a natural born genius who's worked so hard in this world. And he's really smart, and he's going to become a great engineer. And then some kid just shows up from another world with a bunch of advanced knowledge already in his head, and is like, "Don't worry, I'll stop him." Like, cheats. I feel cheated of all my hard effort.
One thing that, before we wrap up this plot point, that I had a little bit of an issue with is it feels like this story, even from the light novel or the manga, or maybe it's different in those, I'm not sure, but from the anime perspective, it feels like this story was written week to week. In the sense that they don't reference a lot of the stuff that happens at the end in the beginning. And I'll try to explain myself there because that doesn't make too much sense. But a lot of times in anime or in any media, we get like a little bit of maybe halfway through or at some points we get a little like perspective of like someone plotting or someone doing evil things or scheming, if you will. And we get a little bit of that with like that renegade girl with like the scar on her eye that we talked about.
Yeah.
But we don't get anything about that from the Western Kingdom. And we do get like a little bit, hey, those Western Kingdom people might be bad. But we don't get introduced to any of the characters and stuff. And I think it would have helped a lot, maybe like at the end of the first episode, to be like, to see that prince having a discussion with the queen lady and being like, those stupid people in that nation who took our throne, we'll get them one day. Just to paint a picture in our head. Because when we are introduced to it, as we said before, it is so abrupt and so crazy that to me, it literally felt sort of like amateurish, where a guy's just like, all right, cool. And then they kill the demon beast, and then that nation attacks, and there's a prince, and he's angry. And it's just like,
yeah.
This came out of, all of this came out of nowhere. And that's, and I feel like, again, I don't know if it's the source material, and I don't know if it's this show just being poorly done. I don't know which is the culprit. But regardless, I would have liked for at this, because this is the final medium, I would have liked if they could have corrected that somehow. To be like, even though the manga didn't do this or the light novel did this, let's introduce those characters early so that when they come back, it's less of a jarring experience.
I totally agree. So I think it's fine in the manga because I don't expect my manga. I certainly like it when they do, but I don't expect it, especially when an adaptation of a light novel, to foreshadow something that's going to happen in 70 chapters, right? That's pretty far ahead to like plan.
That's fair.
That However, I think if you're an anime, it's fine to foreshadow something that's going to happen in 6 episodes. That's going to be your half of the show. I think you're right. That, and here's a related issue I have. The war doesn't feel like a war so much as a series of like fated encounters where it's like, now we're going to fight this main character. Because it's not clear like what the battle lines are, who everyone is, where everyone's going, like what the goal is. It's just, it isn't treated like a real war. It's treated like a series of anime fights, and that means that it's like a little less engaging to me. It's a little less realistic.
That's a really good point. Because they like sack the one city and they're just done, right? Yeah. They're just like,
Let's get married to the princess. They hold it.
Yeah, and it's just like, I don't think that's quite how, like, sure, they occupy the city, but it's like, okay, cool, we occupy the city. This is now our forward operating base. Now let's go attack the main, like, you know? But you're right. They're just like, we're cool here for a bit, guys. We'll hang out.
Something
it's
that
fine.
We talk so much about original Gundam, but it does so well is they reference previous military events. Like, Char sunk 4 battleships at the Battle of Loom, right? That's something that people talk about all the time. Yeah. They're like, oh, he was in charge at the Battle of Loom. What's the name of that general? You know who I'm talking about.
General Revel?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And then they're also like, all right, we're going to be planning an operation to attack Maku's diamond mines. Like, they've got all this stuff, right, where parts of the military are moving around and things are happening. And it's not just, like, the white base is tearing a line through this war. That sort of ends up happening
at the end. Which it does feel like a lot.
Because that becomes the military strategy, is just put the Gundam in the path of anything dangerous. To be fair, it's a pretty good strategy. But certainly, at least in the beginning, when they're on the whole, like, we're on the run, like, until they get to Jaburo, I like that there's a sense of war and of a world that's happening around them. For this, it feels like nothing happens. If it doesn't happen within 20 meters of our protagonist, it didn't happen. Like, it doesn't matter.
Pretty much.
It's like an incomplete world that only exists as long as the protagonist is near it. Like, there's no object permanence.
That's a really good point. I didn't think about that. Because, yeah, they should have been, like, sacking other cities. There should have been a bigger, like, front line. But there wasn't.
What is the Order of the Silver Phoenix doing? All right, lastly. Or almost lastly, because we have a little bit of a note here at the end of the discussion. But this almost does what I want most out of a mecha show that I have yet to get or see. So listeners, pay attention. If you have the answer to this, email me and we'll watch
it. I have the answer to it and you're not going to like it.
It's not going
to
be Frame Arms Girls.
Darn.
So
you got me.
First, this is almost the show, the rare unicorn show that actually takes a serious look at mecha development. That's like, that just shows you of people developing mechas and like what that's like and what their concerns are and how they're doing it and what's going on. I think that'd be a lot of fun. We get a taste of it here, of them like trying to figure stuff out. The manga does a little more of that, of showing like the design process, and I think that seems really fun to me. There's very few shows actually focus on. So common criticism people have who don't watch mecha is they're like, I don't want to rush a show that's just about giant robots, right? All they care about is the mecha. Whereas in fact, most shows don't care about the mecha. The robots are there, but that's not the focus of the show in the vast majority of cases.
Like all of Macross and all of Pat Labor.
Even Gundam.
And all of, 90% of the shows we watch, which is just like, those are there to support and build the world and really be like, you know, they're crucial to like, you know, how everything is, but it's about the characters or the politics or the lovers or the singing. I'm drunk on the podcast, guys.
I would love a show that actually is about the robots. So this almost does that. Then I want a show that examines like why robots, right? Why is it that we like build these death machines to look like humans? Why did we end up with them? Metaphorically, not like literally, why are they built like this? But Ernie says it is essential for it to be the human form and that aesthetics are important, but he doesn't really explain why that's so important to him. So we're really close to addressing this
really
like, core
points.
Question about the mecha genre, which is like, why are there human-shaped robots? What do they stand for in this story? What do they mean? Like,
I think that's really interesting, especially in a world where, and I guess Gundam does this really well. Always go back to Gundam. we as humans, I guess I can speak for us as a species, we went sort of from the you know, to the tank. I'm thinking of that as our closest analog, maybe the jet fighter to a mecha. And we have this make-believe world of knights and magic that has carriages and stuff, but it is interesting to see that when they went for this giant battle machine, they sort of didn't just make an armored carriage.
No, they went for the
went straight to a giant knight robot, which seems, you know, again, it's fantasy and whatever, sci-fi, I get it. Quite a leap of technology. And then I kind of liked how Gundam did it, which was like they did actually make tanks, big giant tanks, and they gave them arms, and then they're like, well, what if we gave them legs?
Like, also,
and then kind of evolved from there.
In Gundam, the reason they have mobile suits is because they don't use nuclear weapons. Is they've had to reduce themselves really to a more human personal combat. They have to fight it lower than their actual capacity at all times.
The Antarctic Treaty, which prevented.
So it's really interesting to me that after we have mobile suits in Gundam because humans have decided not to go all out. And that to reduce themselves is to reduce themselves to the human form. In this, I would almost say it's interesting that they decided that their ultimate weapon was going to be a representative of the aristocracy. Because, I mean, historically, knights were, they weren't commoners. They were wealthy people. They were aristocrats. No. They were trained in combat. They were upper class.
They had power, land.
Yeah, power and land and that sort of thing. So the demonstration of power in this universe is a big noble.
It's horrifying to be a peasant.
Yeah, it would be horrifying to be a peasant in this world. There is no possibility of peasant revolt unless they were somehow able to seize a Silhouette Knight for themselves. But even then, they wouldn't know how to pilot it because that's a privilege reserved for the elites who get to go to the academy.
I love how your background has warped your thinking about this. No, I shouldn't say warped, but you know what I mean.
Warped.
I know, right? I was like, twisted is kind of bad too, but...
I've been playing Persona 5 Royal. Make me sound like a Persona villain. You're my distorted cognition.
I mean, you can be Igor. I don't know. That's maybe not a compliment.
Is this a jab at my nose, Dan?
No. This is just a jab at your likeness. Actually, going back really quickly. You said, I want a mecha show that does this. And everyone's like, hey, guys, when are you going to watch Athemis Team? which isn't mecha
development. Is Athemis Team about mecha
It's not about mecha development. So much so as it's about realistic mech battles. But there's like, they have to do like repairs and stuff. And like, in the sense that it's like, it's on the edge. It's on the fringe. You know what I'm saying? It's not mecha development.
It gets in there.
And then also, we had a little bit of that in Pat Labor, remember? With like Shinohara Industries. It wasn't development per se, as it was like software upgrades, but there was like, it was sort of company corporate perspective.
It does make you think about how these mechs are run with software in a way that other shows don't.
Which is, you know, it's part of the development. You can't use software.
Program. All right.
Last little footnote here is that Ian has completely ruined Isekai for me in the sense that it was like Plato's Allegory of the Cave. We're going to go there. Where I was in the cave, I was content with my isekai show. And then Ian's like, hey, Dan, check out what's outside this cave. And now I can't watch isekai anymore. It's kind of, he just ruined it for me. I think I actually enjoyed these six episodes less. Because you told me about that, but that's fine. I mean, I'm glad I know now. I'm glad you have an entire genre has been crossed off my list.
I'm glad I could deny you any enjoyment, Dan.
I know that's what you live for, right? So like, yes, got another one. Go down. But yeah, that's it. That's my footnote.
All right. So now it's time for the Mech Corner. Again, we've got quite a few here.
This is gonna be difficult.
So first, we've got the Ikaruga. Let's talk about it. This is Ernie's big boy.
Is the blue one, right?
So the Ikaruga. Yeah, so it's blue with like gold trim. It's got like four arms. And it's got two ether reactors. One on the back to pilot the thruster, which lets it fly, and one in the front. And it's got a big old sword. I don't know. It's cool. I like this thing.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. It's definitely the most similar to any mech we've ever seen, just because of the way it works. Like, it's like, okay, this is like, you could put this in Valve Rave and it wouldn't be too out of place.
Oh, by the way, it's got 6 arms.
That's a lot of arms.
I was wrong. It does not have 4, it has 6. Dan?
Yeah, sorry.
Oh, you zoned out for a second.
No, I didn't know if you were going to talk or if I was going to talk, so we'll have to cut there. Oh,
I was just interjecting that I was wrong, but
okay, it's got 6 arms. And I was just like, okay. And then I was like, oh, wait, is this for me to talk? Okay, sorry.
I do think it's the most similar because it's like his dream mech, so it's based more on the mechs of our reality than the Silhouette Knights. It looks a little less like a knight, though it's still got several of the defining Silhouette Knight characteristics. It's got the flag on the crotch, it's got the high heel boots, it's got the shoulder pads and the helmet.
It's got a big gun.
But it's designed to be sort of terrifying,
yeah,
I think. And it's high mobility, high speed, high power. I really like the Ikaruga. I think it just looks cool.
Yeah, I think it looks cool too. I think this is the best looking mech for the show. I kind of unfortunate that because the show is about mech development, we couldn't have it from the beginning. Sort of like how we always have our Gundam from the beginning of the show. But it is definitely a good one to end on for sure.
And its helmet is actually more like samurai design.
Oh.
Have you noticed that if you look close up, it's not like a knight's helmet. It's designed to look a little more like a traditional, like, Japanese helmet.
Wouldn't expect anything different from our
that sort of thing.
Isekai boy.
Right. But it's a good nod at himself.
Mm-hmm.
Next, I almost don't want to talk about this, but it's because it's got a name that offends me. It's the Early Dryad Cumber. So if you remember the Earl Cumber, this is the upgraded version where it's got a big sword, an arm shield, and then 2 massive shields that split on its subarms.
Yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah.
That's all I gotta say.
I like how the shield splits and then can, like, eject. It's just, like, makes a shield seemingly more useful.
I like the whole shield basis for this thing, and then its companion mech is sword based. There's a pairing there.
Ah, it's like Pokemon. Sword and Shield.
We got to the same joke. Its companion is the Gwarland, which is the evolved form of the Gwar. It's like a Digimon.
Yeah,
and this thing has got 4 swords, and that's basically what it does.
Yeah, it's like
Legend of Zelda.
Our Zoro boy puts one in his mouth. You know, it's pretty cool. He doesn't do that, but I like it.
That would be really good, though, if it were just like a Roron or a Zoro.
Yeah.
So then there's the Sword Man.
Which I choose to believe this is also a mistranslation, but whatever. So we have Sword Man.
Here's the problem. Without going back into it to, like, get the names specifically from the thing, there isn't really a site that catalogs all of these Silhouette Knights. So I had to do a very, like, a little bit of aggressive Googling, and I had to, like, find a website and then translate some stuff from Japanese into English.
A real hassle, if you will.
And so the Sword Man is a phoneticized, like, caption I found on Pinterest, so that might not even be what it's really called, but I think it's called the Sword Man,
I think it's called,
right?
The Sword Man, too. They say that in the anime.
It's kind of like a 00, like, it's really thin, it's got 4 swords.
I was thinking it's like Zvi or Dry, like one of the thrones, kind of, with like the way it's like kind of chunky.
But also like it's as thin as like an enact.
Or like
it's
a
really
flag.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. Next is the Scarecrows. So these are the, these are like the tall, thin guys. They've got long necks and big coats, and they are mostly ranged. And these are like the I've already forgotten the name of this. Kush Persha Silhouette Knights.
Yeah, I hate how they look. Have you played Dark Souls 2?
No.
There's like a boss where you gotta fight 3 of these suckers. That's it. That's all it reminded me of. So that must be like the tall neck head thing must be like an actual design from something. Like in real life.
Yeah.
What it is, I don't know. But it is
maybe
something.
Scarecrows. So, Dan, do you want to read this next one for me? Because it's written out in characters.
Yeah, like in, okay.
Hiragana?
I'll read it slow. Katakana, yeah. It's Karutoga. I don't know what that means.
Yeah.
And then Oru. Like, I don't know what that is either. And then Kusheru. Kusheru.
Like Kushpersha, probably.
So, probably, yeah. So, it might be like... what we talked about earlier is this is probably... the katakana version of like what would be French or German or something, or a made up language in their in the show. Because it's not English, that's for sure. So yeah.
The problem is that I could not figure out what the romanization is, so I could not Google it in English to figure out like what it was, you know?
Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's probably something of in like that.
That said, this is like a really nice, it's like got a light purple and like sort of this faded gold and white coloring. It's got like a Valkyrie style helmet, a big shield, and a sword. I like the look of this guy.
Mm-hmm.
It's like it's a nobility. It's the Kushpersian nobility's silhouette knight, because that's every nobility has one.
So yeah,
I think it looks cool. I like the design. I like that we're seeing different design aesthetics apply in different like countries, right? They have their own idea of what their nobility's thing should look like,
because in, especially with the scarecrows,
in our home country or whatever, the gold Leo is like this ridiculous ostentatious thing with a fur coat that shoots big lasers. So I like that in their country it's this elegant sort of female style mobile suit, because of course mobile suits are gendered.
Good callback, Ian.
So the White Knights next is the Tyrantor.
What a name.
This is a rock and dark type. It's a pseudo legendary from Generation 2. It's cool though. It's heavily armored. It's got red spikes on it. It's sort of Zaku like, right? It's got spikes on its shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
It's got an inlaid head with like horns. And it's got subarms, because this is ripped off the Telestari.
Yeah, they like stole the tech.
It's kind of like the Zaku and like a Zagok had a baby.
Yeah. It's a little bit more rounded, yeah, as you said. It's just, I think it's good for, like, an enemy suit, you know? It's, like, pretty sweet.
Yeah, I think it's cool. And then lastly, this is, like, the mobile armor of the show, the Viver. It's shaped like a dragon. It's got dragon claws, it breathes fire, it's got, like, a lightning shield, it's got a freaking I-beam barrier or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, eye field. And also on the top of its head is like just a mobile suit, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like a Knight Runner that like sits on top of the dragon head, like it's fused to it.
Very similar to the 00, the Alejandro Coroner one, where it's like a little mobile suit on top of a mobile armor. Very similar thing. Except this is much larger scale.
Yeah.
I think. I don't remember the scale. It's cool. So you haven't watched it, and I actually think, Ian, I think this is going to be a good joke.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say it on the podcast again, and I'm going to will it into existence. We need to do Gundam Age. No one has ever said that before, but I will say it now. So in the first arc of Gundam... which arc of Gundam Age is it? I forget. Maybe I'm completely off base and it's not Gundam Age. But I think it's Gundam Age where there's a mobile armor that is like dragon-like. And it sort of reminds me of this, where it's like... I don't know how I feel about dragon-like mobile armors. But I think in this context, it's definitely more flavorful. Gundam Age less so. But that's kind of what that reminded me of.
Anyway, I like in general, looking back on all of the mech designs in this show, I think I have a very positive view of them. I like that they're uniform in their like design sense. They all feel like they're from the same show, but there's also differences that are regional. I like the progression of things that have been developed. I like their key features. I think the coloring is good. There's nothing like that sticks out to me as like ridiculously ugly looking.
I
think this is far higher, better than average than I expect from a 13 episode.
I think I agree
show.
With you. I think this puts it above average. I think it's flavorful, right? They're knights. They're cool.
Mm-hmm.
Centaur, cool, right? Like that. I think the centaur put it a little above and beyond, because it's still like a mythological fantasy kind of thing, but it also fit the show pretty well.
Yeah, it fits the theming.
And some of them are a little generic, but like when I think about like generic bad mechs, I think of Buddy Complex. in the sense that, like,
yeah. Well, I'm surprised you can even think of Buddy Complex. When I try to think about it, my brain just slides off of it because I forgot it existed.
I couldn't tell you. I know there's Dio and Alba, because Dio is, you know,
and
JoJo.
I know there's time travel.
But, like, when I think about that show, I like, the mechs are, like, one of the last things I can even think of. And while they weren't awful on that show, it's just, like, they were so unexciting that I think, you know, compared to something like this, this does a much better job. And I think it's a little, I try not to compare, like, this show to, like, Pat Labor or Macross or Gundam, because there's, like, kind of a whole different ballpark.
It's unfair.
Right? It's, like, a little unfair.
They're also significantly longer
than
this
show.
Yeah,
so when I was like, well, maybe, like, Buddy Complex is, like, probably a better comparison. I was like, yeah, this does do, like, better. And Gargantua really isn't much of a mecha. It's one.
No.
So that's kind of hard, but actually there's more.
No, but I think, yeah, you're right.
So, yeah.
If we compare this to Buddy Complex, which I think is, like, came out around the same time, it's a very comparable show. This is, like, heads and shoulders above it in almost every way, even with all its problems.
I wouldn't say Buddy Complex came out in 2010, dude, but whatever.
Oh, did it really?
Yeah, Buddy Complex was old.
Dang. I
forgot Ian and I are aging and near death, and time is going exponentially faster. Isn't that awful?
Final thoughts, Dan. What do you have to say about?
I actually hate to say this because it seems like I was talking quite highly of the show. Is I don't think I liked the show. I think I did a better job of, and I think we've got some criticism from some fans, and I appreciate it. We're mean, Ian. I'm going to say it frankly. We're mean. We're mean to people. We're mean to shows, and in turn, that hurts people's feelings because they identify with shows they like. So I'm sorry. So in that regard, I try to be a little bit more less mean.
If you like this show, Dan wants you to die in a ditch.
Yeah, I mean, Ian's saying what he's trying to say. Like, I'm winking at Ian in Morse code right now, and that's what that spelled out. But yeah, I think part of it was that you were an isekai for me, and part of it was I just couldn't stand Ernie towards the end. I thought he was a one-dimensional character, and I sort of got sick of his crap. And then I also just couldn't care about any of the other characters. I think this show had almost zero meaningful character interaction. Some of it was funny, but literally it was, like, meaningful. Like, I don't care about Edgar's story arc of him getting revenge and Dietrich not being a coward. Like, these are all very one-dimensional things. And as I said before, half of these characters don't even return in the end. So it's like, there's no point. So it may sound like I'm being overly harsh right now, but just because this is my final thoughts on the whole show, I kind of have to tell you how I feel. Similar to,
but you didn't fall for Kid and the Princess's Romance.
Dude, that was just, I was, like, totally rude. No. And so basically, I think this is totally a fine show. I think if you want, and this is going to sound mean, if you just need something on and you don't really care and you're going to talk through it, like you're watching this with, like, your friend or your partner or whatever, and you're sort of half paying attention to it or you're doing something else or whatever, I think it's a wonderful show for that. It's great to look at. The music's good. Everything's fun. It's fun.
Designs are good.
It's a fun show.
Yeah.
That being said, if you're like, man, I just finished a good show and I want another good show to watch, don't watch this one because it's going to be a letdown. And that's it.
So I definitely like this show more than you. But part of that is because I like the manga. And so here's the first thing.
Into each other, I understand.
When we get to the related recommendation section in a second here, read the manga. I think it'll give you everything this show does except good. And you'll get more of the more interesting stuff. There's more of the character stuff. However, we were talking about the anime here. So getting that out of the way, part of that is that I like the show more because I've read the manga. Mm-hmm. That's just how these things work usually, unless the adaptation's really bad, like, I don't know, Berserk. But you're right. There is no real character. Ernie's gimmick is cute and funny in the beginning and then quickly wears off when it becomes clear that's all he's going to do.
Yeah.
The fights are good, though. The music is good. There's a spectacle to it. The designs are interesting. You can definitely put this on one monitor and clear a dungeon in Skyrim on the other.
Yeah,
like,
perfect for that kind of thing.
Neither are activities that require that much attention, so they're perfect as complements to each other.
Yeah, it's like when you just need to grind an MMO or something. It's exactly like that. Yeah, just put them on.
Yeah. You're not going to miss much. There's not much nuance to the show, but I think it's fine. I think it's definitely, like, average or maybe even a little better than average because we have to remember exactly how many anime get made.
Yeah, right.
And the fact that the show has some level of enjoyment to it probably means it's pretty good. I wouldn't watch it again. I might read the manga again just to go back and be like, and do another comparison run. But definitely, like, that's sort of it for me. It's fine. I don't hate it though, and I don't think if you like this show, I think I understand why.
Fair enough.
Time for me to die in a ditch.
That's now I have to actually mercy kill Ian. So next week Ian will not be on the podcast.
So for the related recommendations, I'm listing here a couple isekai manga that I liked that I think are fairly good. So if I ruined isekai for you, you can go read this manga, of course. I do recommend it. If you like this show at all, you probably should read the manga because it will fill in all those gaps we talked about. Two others, though. Saihate no Paladin is really pretty, and it's got like a surprisingly emotional core, and it avoids the worst of the isekai tropes where it's like, oh, the church is super evil, and they're actually in human trafficking, because that's like a big isekai trope. Mm-hmm. And it has like a sort of nuanced view of religion. That's interesting. And then I Was Reincarnated as a Slime is a good comedy, power, like, overpowered, fun time show. I think it's worth watching.
Oh, good recommendations. Thank you.
Or I haven't even watched it. I've read it. It's worth reading. I've heard the anime is good, too, though. So.
Okay.
Next week, Dan, we're going finally back to the beginning. The Universal Century. We're going to go do... We watched the first movie. We watched Mobile Gundam Thunderbolt, December Sky.
Yes.
A long time ago.
A long time ago.
Like November. Like a year ago November. In fact, so long ago that we recorded that episode, Dan, with the two of us next to each other.
We had the mic on the bed. It was a good experience.
Now that is impossible for a number of reasons. One being that no one is allowed to be next to each other, and one being that you live in Japan.
Yeah. But both really, you know, remove that from existence, but whatever.
So, and I also haven't even seen this movie. So next week, we're watching Mobile Suit Gundam, Thunderbolt, Bandit Flower, which is the summary movie of the second season, keeping that trend going. So I'm excited to see how this goes.
I'm excited too, because I've seen it once when it came out. No, I haven't seen the movie. Yeah. I've seen the show, which again, it's like 4 15-minute episodes, so whatever. Or like whatever.
Yeah, so it's like the movie. Yeah.
Yeah, but I remember being wacky is my word of choice. Awesome. So we'll see.
All right, if you want to reach out to us and tell us what the name of that royal silhouette knight is that we only had in Japanese,
yes, please tell us like what it actually means, because
you can reach us at mechadoaboutnothing@gmail.com. that's the name of the podcast, @gmail.com. our website is mechadoo.moe, and our Twitter account is @mechadoopodcast. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, Ian.
Until next week, will you be able to survive?